Hello and welcome to episode number 32 of the AFTV Newscast, being recorded March 25th, 2016. My name is Elias Saba and I run AFTVnews.com, and this is where I talk about the week's Fire TV news and then end the episode, as always, by answering a whole bunch of questions submitted by listeners and the readers of the site. I stream the AFTV Newscast live every Fridays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific. You're welcome to watch live, but of course I always put up the episode the next day in RSS form, audio only, and on YouTube in video format. On youtube.com/AFTV News, and links to all the different audio RSS streams that you can find the podcast at in the links below. I always put links about everything that I talk about, so definitely check out the links either in the post that I make about the episode or even in your little podcast client. We'll have all those links as well. All right, let's get right into the news. First thing I wanted to talk about is the low supply of the Fire TV Stick, and addressing some emails I've been getting from people asking if the Fire TV Stick is going to have a new model released, and is that why it's currently out of stock? It seems like every time the Fire TV Stick goes out of stock, I get some emails from people eagerly waiting for the next generation Fire TV Stick, asking if this is an indication, and generally usually is an indication if the device starts going out of stock on a regular basis and it takes a little while for Amazon to get new supplies. It means they're not churning them out in large quantities so that they don't get stuck with a big supply once the new generation is released. So the Fire TV Stick with voice remote bundle, this is the newer bundle, it's currently showing out of stock. We'll be back in stock, I believe April 4th was the last time I checked. The Fire TV Stick with the non-voice remote, the original bundle, that one is in stock, but it has a little note about needing a couple more days to process orders, so you probably won't get it as quickly as maybe the two-day Prime shipping normally would get it to you at. That usually is an indication that the supply is a little bit low on that also, but not just completely out of stock and waiting for an actual shipment from the manufacturing plants and all that stuff. So the big question, does that mean a new Fire TV Stick is coming out soon? We don't know. There's no real way to know. I haven't heard anything from my sources at Amazon about that, but my guess would be that no, a new Fire TV Stick is probably not going to be out in the next month or so. That said, the Fire TV, the original Fire TV, was released in April back in 2014, and so April is just around the corner. So who knows? Maybe Amazon is going to surprise us with a new Fire TV Stick in April to kind of, along the lines of when that first Fire TV was released. But in my opinion, it's probably unlikely. My best guess would be that we'll see a new Fire TV Stick, an actual new Fire TV Stick, released near the end of this year, probably around the September-October time. I would guess that probably maybe both devices would be updated. The current new Fire TV Stick with voice remote is actually the same model as the old one that was released back, I believe, in November or October in 2014. That was when the Fire TV Stick was first debuted with the non-voice remote, and then last October or so, they basically refreshed it by including a voice remote, but with the same exact model. I'll put a link in the show notes of a comparison between the non-voice Fire TV Stick and the voice Fire TV Stick. I actually took them both apart just to verify that the internals are actually identical. For the most part, the actual chips vary a little bit, the memory chips, but the speed of the processor and all that stuff is pretty much the same. The amount of memory, everything's the same. So they're virtually identical. For the most part, you can consider them identical. So we only have really one Fire TV Stick model that is now going on about a year and a half old. So it's somewhat time for a new Fire TV Stick. That's why there's definitely a chance that we'll see one in the next few months. But I still think that Amazon is probably going to be shooting for near the end of the year so that they get the news coverage right before Christmas, so people are buying these for Christmas and for Black Friday and all that stuff. That's pretty much the biggest selling time for the Fire TV Stick. It is the pretty much most popular media streaming device that Amazon sells over the regular Fire TV box, so I don't think Amazon is going to let it get too stale. So it's almost like a coin flip whether we're going to get a new Fire TV Stick in the next month or so, or whether we're going to get one at the end of the year. My bet, like I said, is still for the end of the year, but we never really know. So like I said, supplies are low, so it's kind of an indication that Amazon is not just mass producing these and keeping a big stockpile in the warehouses, ready to ship. They probably are just producing as many as they feel like they can sell in a short period of time. That way, when they are ready to release the new Fire TV Stick, which I'm sure is being worked on, I have no doubt, being such a popular device that they have to be working on the brand new one as we speak and gearing up for that release soon-ish. But the non-voice remote, the Bluetooth-based non-voice remote, is actually also out of stock on Amazon's site. That's been out of stock for, I think, about a month now. So, you know, it seems like Amazon is switching over from Bluetooth-based remotes over to Wi-Fi-based remotes, even though a lot of people haven't been liking these Wi-Fi-based remotes, just because there's a bit of a lag, it seems, from when that remote kind of wakes up and makes that initial connection so you can start using it. But there are some benefits to the Wi-Fi-based remote. Battery life is a little better, range is a little better, but it just seems like that little wake up is a little slower than the Bluetooth-based remote. So that's why a lot of people don't like these newer Wi-Fi remotes. But I believe it was yesterday or the day before, I saw just for a very short period, the Bluetooth-based non-voice remote for the Fire TV Stick, which also works on the Fire TV box, but you know it's meant to be a Fire TV Stick remote. It just very briefly for a few hours showed that it was going to be back in stock in April, and then that message was gone again. Yeah, there's really nothing more to say about that. Low stock tends to indicate that Amazon is ready for a new device, but we don't know when that's going to be. If I recall, the first generation Fire TV kind of went through this where for several months it would go in and out of stock. So that, you know, Amazon, it seemed like, was just producing boxes as necessary and shipping them over, and which sometimes resulted in the device going out of stock for a few weeks, you know, especially after like a sale that would cause them to go out of stock for a couple weeks until new supply got in. So that was the first gen Fire TV just a few months before the second gen was released. So, you know, we'll probably start seeing this pattern of the Fire TV Stick going out of stock and coming back into stock for the next few months, you know, as we get closer to the end of the year, I would imagine, when I would expect a new Fire TV Stick to be released. As far as what the new Fire TV Stick is going to have and what it's going to bring to the table, your guess is as good as mine. I have no insider info on that, but I know a lot of people always want me to speculate and are always curious what I think the new Fire TV Stick will have in tow. A while back, I talked about this in one of the podcast episodes, what I thought the new Fire TV Stick, somebody asked me a question about what I thought the new Fire TV Stick would have and what it would bring. And I pretty much figured that it's a 50-50 chance that it's either going to be as much horsepower as they can fit at a $50 price range, which would probably be something like a quad core processor, maybe bumping up the RAM a little bit. I don't think it would go 4K. I think they're going to reserve that for the main Fire TV box. I doubt they would probably fit in a micro SD card into that, but then again, all of their tablets now have micro SD card slots, and the, of course, second generation Fire TV has a micro SD card slot. So it seems like that would kind of make sense if they could try to cram in a micro SD card slot into that Fire TV Stick. That'd be pretty nice. But that's one side of it. But the other side, which I think is actually more likely, is that they're going to keep the Fire TV Stick as the cheapest possible 1080p streaming device that they can make. So I'm imagining the next generation Fire TV Stick to basically keep similar specs to the current generation, but receive a price drop. Maybe there'll be a new remote coming with it, you know, a remote that would probably work on both maybe the third generation Fire TV, if this happens at the end of the year, and the second generation or 2.5 generation Fire TV Stick, since the current second generation Fire TV Stick is actually not a new device. But they're probably going to call it the third generation Fire TV Stick. So I would think that Amazon would want that to be as cheap as possible, almost like a gimme, you know, a free giveaway practically for Amazon Prime members, so that they can kind of get Amazon content and get a foothold into the living room of Amazon Prime members. You know, maybe try to run promos where if you sign up for Amazon Prime, you get a free Fire TV Stick, you know, depending on how low they can get that price. If you guys recall, when the first Fire TV Stick was released, they had a promo where Amazon Prime members could pre-order the Fire TV Stick for $19, which I assume is pretty much right at that manufacturing cost for Amazon. And so if back at the end of 2014, Amazon was manufacturing the Fire TV Stick for $20, you know, how low is that now? You know, is it $15 to manufacture this exact device? I'm sure the voice remote has added a little bit on top of that. So if they're shipping the next generation Fire TV Stick with a voice remote only, which I think is probably going to happen just because there's so much focus on Alexa these days, it's Amazon's hottest product right now. So I would imagine that the next generation Fire TV Stick will probably ship only with a voice remote. And so maybe they'll get that price down as well. But yeah, pretty much in summary, I don't think there's going to be a new Fire TV Stick in the next few months. I think it's going to be at the end of the year, but I have no way of knowing. It's almost like a coin flip in my opinion. And as far as it being a super robust device, I would not expect it to be that way. I don't know. It just seems like because Amazon's tablets have kind of gone backwards, whereas last generation's tablets were actually a little bit more powerful, a little bit better screens than the newer current generation tablets. It seems like Amazon has learned that their niche with hardware is getting in with the base set of features that people want at as cheap of a price as possible. And it seems like the Fire TV stick kind of fits that category, whereas the Fire TV box is more of that flagship, you know, 4K, as much horsepower as they can cram into it at $100. So who knows? We'll have to wait and see. You know, hopefully we will get a Fire TV stick soon. All right, let's talk about some new apps that came out this week. The big app that I want to talk about that I posted about and seems to get a lot of good response is this app called Fan TV. Now, this app is linked to the service at fan.tv, which is their URL. So Fan TV is pretty much an app that is going to help you find content to watch, essentially. So once you install the app, you have to log in with your fan.tv account, and you unfortunately have to create that on their website. You can't actually do it through the app itself, as far as I could find. But once you log in, the first thing you find is it asking you which services you want shows and movies from. And so they have a really large selection of services that they support, that basically they crawl and they know about all the content that those services have. And so they have Amazon services separated into two categories, one being Instant Video, one being Prime Video. And so Instant Video would include everything that you can purchase and rent from Amazon, and where Prime Video obviously is all the content that's available to stream for free for Prime members, you know, through Amazon Prime Video. The other services that they include search results for are the big names like Netflix, Hulu, HBO, Showtime, Crackle, and they even have some of the cable networks like A&E, History Channel, Food Network. I mean, the list is massive. You can go to fan.tv. They have a big list there. If you create your account, you can actually go into your settings area on fan.tv and configure all the different services. You know, you just checkbox the ones that you're interested in, the ones that you have access to. And so essentially, once you have basically selected the services that you have access to, that you want to see results for, those are the only services that they'll show content for. So if, you know, if you don't have Showtime, it's not going to bring up Showtime only series, you know, when you do a search. The interface is pretty straightforward. It's very nice, very clean. The main menu basically has two main sections, movies and shows, and then they have a search feature, and then they have a settings section. So main menu is very simple. You're not really going to spend much time in there, but once you're inside of actually either movies and or shows, where you're pretty much going to spend all your time, that's where, you know, you'll get the most use out of the app. So essentially, when you dunk into the, say, movies section, you're going to find curated lists that are relevant to the services that you've selected for different movies. So, you know, I had selected Prime as one of the services that I am subscribed to. And so they have a list of Prime movies, and it's basically what's hot on Prime movies. And so that will only have movies from Prime. And since I also selected the Amazon Video option, they had a list of hot movies to rent and hot movies to purchase. And so again, these lists will be a little bit curated for the services that you've selected, which is nice. You can also look at other lists like what's coming soon or what's in theaters now. And so you can mark a movie as, like, you know, you're on your watch list or like a favorite movie that you can then get back to and look at later, maybe once it actually gets released on a service that you like. They also have kind of like, I guess, fun little lists like all of the Bond movies. So if you right now, since, you know, Spectre just kind of came out on Blu-ray a little bit ago and it's been in the news, so they've got a Bond list, and then you can basically see all the Bond movies that are available through the services that you've selected. You can also browse movies and TV shows just by genre. The genres, you know, the one you would expect: adventure, animation, comedy, crime, documentaries, blah, 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 action, that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's just a good alternative way to browse for content on the Fire TV. And one of the huge big advantages of this fan.tv app is that it integrates Netflix and Amazon in one, and this is something that is not available on the main Amazon Fire TV interface, as most of you probably know. So I'll talk about that a little bit, just because, you know, me talking about this app has kind of spurred questions on why Netflix is not in the main Fire TV interface. Why doesn't it work when you do the voice searching? Why do you never get Netflix search results on the Fire TV? So I'll talk about that in a second once I'm done talking about this app in full. So if you're watching the video version, you can see here, this is what it looks like when you select a single movie or even a single TV show episode, you basically see a full list of all the different ways you can watch that movie through the services that you have selected. And so here I can see that Ghostbusters is available, for example, through Amazon Prime to play for free, and it's also available to rent for $2.99 or purchase for $9.99. I did notice that the prices that they have for some of these movies from the different services are not completely up to date if the movie is on sale, for example. So I looked up a few movies I remember that I knew had just gone on sale that day or the day before, and so they had not updated their prices, so I wouldn't fully trust those prices. Yeah, scrolling down further on my article here, you could see what TV shows look like. And so basically with a TV show, you go into the TV show, you can select the season you want, and again, once you select an episode, you'll see down below a list of the different places you can get that episode, and whether it's going to cost you money or that sort of stuff. So the app does have a search feature. Unfortunately, you can't use Alexa's voice capabilities to search within the app. That's just not supported on the Fire TV with any app yet. It's only on the main interface. So it would be really nice if that was the case, just because their on-screen keyboard is kind of annoying in my opinion. They don't use the Fire TV's default on-screen keyboard. Instead, they have one long list of characters that you have to scroll through, and then they have numbers on another line, and they have like capital letters, I believe, on another line. It's not the best on-screen keyboard in my opinion. I would have preferred them just to use the default Fire TV on-screen keyboard. I actually did not test to see if a USB keyboard worked with this app. I wish I did that now that I think about it. So forgive me, but I don't know if a USB keyboard does work with their app. But overall, it's a decent little app you should check out if you're subscribed to a different bunch of different services, especially Netflix, since Netflix integration on the Fire TV is pretty much non-existent. And so people were asking in the comments, you know, why is there no Netflix integration on the Fire TV? I'll direct you to this article that I'll put a link in the show notes that I wrote a year ago, basically discussing why isn't Netflix on the Fire TV. And the main reason pretty much is because Netflix themselves have chosen not to be integrated into the Fire TV. So the way Amazon has set up the Fire TV's search integration, voice search integration, is that a app has to basically do two things to be integrated into the Fire TV. It has to, one, provide Amazon with a database file for all of the content that is offered within the app. And so that way Amazon can kind of query that when you do a search. So Amazon basically will periodically retrieve that database file from the service. So Showtime, HBO, Crackle, Hulu, they all have provided Amazon. Basically, it's like a link to their database file that the service itself keeps updated, and Amazon can, whenever they want, pull down the latest version. That way they know when content leaves and when content comes and how much it's going to cost and whether it's available to stream for free and so on. And so that's step one for the service, to provide Amazon with basically a list of what content is available through that service. So, you know, that's pretty obvious. You know, the other thing that the service has to do is they have to basically make it so that their app can receive a immediate play request from the Fire TV. So when you do a search on the Fire TV and you're looking at a movie or a TV show and you see that it's available, say, through a third party like Hulu, like HBO, when you hit play, say, for example, to select to watch a certain show or a movie from the third party, what the Fire TV does is basically sends a request to that third party app and tells it, this is the movie I want you to start playing, go ahead and start playing it. That way, when you're searching for a movie within the Fire TV interface and you select that movie, say for example on HBO, it doesn't just load up the HBO app and make you look for that movie a second time. It just basically jumps you directly into that movie or TV show. And so those are the two requirements. The service has to provide Amazon with a list of the content that they offer, and they have to update their app so that it accepts these direct play requests from the Fire TV. And so for whatever reason, Netflix has decided they don't want to do that. They don't want to do that on the Fire TV. When the Fire TV One was first announced back in April 2014, Netflix's CEO stated that they would be integrating into the Fire TV search. It has never happened, and they have never said anything about that since. So in my opinion, I think that it would be advantageous to Amazon more so than Netflix for Netflix to integrate into the Fire TV's interface. I think it would make more customers go over and use the Fire TV than it would make more Amazon customers go over and use Netflix. So I think that's why Netflix has chosen not to empower Amazon even more, since they're basically the two biggest competing subscription services. You know, I'm not sure exactly which one's bigger between Amazon and Hulu, but Those three are pretty much the biggest services. And so Netflix, it's in their advantage to not make the Fire TV the best streaming box available, basically. And if they integrated Netflix into there, it just kind of ticks off one more box on the Fire TV's, you know, list of why it is, you know, the most popular box out there. So yeah, I guess the only thing you can pretty much do about it is contact Netflix, tell them you want integration into the Fire TV, see if maybe they get enough people requesting that they'll actually finally do it. It seems unlikely at this point. You know, I've talked to my contacts at Amazon a little bit about this, and generally the Fire TV development team is kind of annoyed by Netflix just because they make changes to their app that kind of messes things up. This was one of the reasons why the second generation Fire TV launched without surround sound support for third-party apps, is because they had to kind of scramble last minute to make a change so that the Fire TV's OS worked with Netflix's DRM, I believe it was. And so yeah, the two companies are not exactly best friends, unfortunately. Before we move on to the next story, Lori has chimed in here on Twitter saying that she just tried her Bluetooth keyboard with Fan TV, and unfortunately it did not work. That's not surprising since Fan TV is using their own kind of proprietary keyboard. I'm not shocked. It's kind of similar to the YouTube app. The YouTube app does not accept USB or Bluetooth keyboard input on their search because they basically use their own in-app keyboard as opposed to the Fire TV's keyboard. So thank you very much, Lori, for chiming in on Twitter during the live stream to actually try that live and let me know. All right, moving on to the next bit of app news. So Cox Media Group, which is basically a media group that owns a bunch of local TV news channels, has released a suite of 7, I believe, apps for the Fire TV this week. These apps offer on-demand news coverage from local news stations that they basically own, and also live news coverage. And live news, local live news specifically, has been kind of a sore spot in the cord cutter repertoire of apps lately. So that's why I definitely wanted to mention this if you happen to live in one of these areas. So the apps that are included cover Seattle, Boston, Pittsburgh, Charlotte, Atlanta, Orlando, and Memphis. I think Cox Media owns another couple local channels in Jacksonville, Daytona, and Tulsa. So maybe they'll release apps for those, but they haven't done so yet. So if you're in one of those areas, check the show notes. I'll have a link directly to these apps, to this article, so you can get some live news, local news on your Fire TV. All the apps are free. From what I could tell, they have some banner ads in there and maybe some pre-roll ads. I'm not positive, but they work on the Fire TV first and second gen. They also work on the Fire TV stick. So really nice to see more news options. If you don't have local news options, CBS has a great live news app that's available for free on all the Fire TV devices. I would recommend that over any of the other news apps. But you know, unfortunately, it's not local. It's just national news, but still a good option. You know, it's 24/7 live news through that app for free. And so it's a great option for news on the Fire TV. All right, moving on. Next bit of app news. I want to talk a little bit about Plex. A few weeks ago, they actually added 4K playback support in their Fire TV app. I didn't write about it when it first happened, mostly because the support is a bit limited. You need very specific 4K files, very specifically encoded 4K files, for them to actually work through their direct play option, where they don't get actually transcoded and converted essentially through the Plex server. They actually just get passed in their raw format to the Fire TV and they play back. So one of the limitations is that the 4K file that Plex will play has to be encoded at a max bit depth of 8 bits. And a lot of people are encoding their files in 10 bits. So those files are not playing directly on through Plex. They have to be in that 8-bit format. On top of that, the file itself has to actually have the metadata in it that basically tells Plex what the bit depth of the file is. It's labeled as the profile level, and basically it just has to say that it's the quote main profile. There are different profiles. Main is basically the lowest one, which is that 8-bit depth. Another limitation is that Plex still doesn't support surround sound through their direct play option. So the file that you have encoded in the 4K file has to have either AC3 or AAC audio. And then on top of all of that, even if you have the perfect file, there's actually a bug right now that there's a forum thread in Plex's forum discussing this bug, where the Plex app on the Fire TV does not recognize the bit depth or the profile label of a file correctly, and then chooses not to direct play it. Even though the file is perfect, it's actually a bug that Plex has acknowledged and is working on. So overall, great start, you know, for Plex to finally support 4K files on the Fire TV, but it's still a little ways to go. It's the first few steps, it looks like. You're going to have some problems, you know, if you have a bunch of 4K files that you've encoded already. It's going to be mostly miss, you know, it's going to be hit or miss, but mostly miss whether those files will actually play directly through the Plex player on the Fire TV without actually having to do that live transcoding. But as far as I know, this is the first way to play your own 4K files through the Fire TV. You know, Amazon does not have a player built in that plays your own files. Kodi itself does not support 4K on the Fire TV, and so Plex seems to be the only way to get your own files to play on the Fire TV. So hopefully Plex will come through and push out an update that fixes these issues. They said they're working on an update soon. It should come out to make things easier for 4K playback and just better support overall for 4K files on the Fire TV. So look forward to that coming soon. All right, let's move on to some app deal news. This one I definitely wanted to mention, that currently Amazon is offering a $5 Amazon credit for purchasing a $2.99 app. And so essentially you're going to get $2 free if you purchase one of these six $2.99 apps. And the nice thing is that you can use either your Amazon credit or your Amazon coins to purchase these apps. And the $5 credit that you receive from Amazon is actually good towards anything bought on Amazon or you know, sold by Amazon. It's not limited to apps. And so if you have a lot of Amazon coins that maybe you've accumulated over the years that you've gotten for free from the various promotions that I posted about in the past, this is a very nice way to convert those app specific coins to general Amazon credit. So of course I'll put a link in the show notes to the six apps that you can purchase. You can only get the credit once, so there's really no point in purchasing more than one of these apps, of course, unless you want to purchase more than one app, but you're only going to get the $5 credit once. The deal's still going, I believe, until the end of this month. And you have to use the credit by April 7th. So there's a very small window. So, you know, best to have something in mind that you want to buy on Amazon soon to use this $5 credit for. Briefly, the apps that qualify for this promo are Relax Melodies Premium, which is the only Fire TV app that's compatible, Five Nights at Freddy 4, Photolab Pro, Kingdom Rush Origins, Pac-Man HD, and lastly, Ticket to Ride. So those are the six apps that qualify. I definitely, you know, suggest anybody with Amazon coins to go ahead and go through this, just because basically you're getting $2 for free and you're converting limited credits into more generic credits. So it's a win-win. I think totally makes sense for everybody to go ahead and do this. All right, moving on. Another app deal that came up this week is the game Shadowgun, which is one of the more popular first-person shooter games available for the Fire TV, is currently on sale, down from $4.99's regular price down to $1.99. I'll put a link in the show notes if you're interested in this. It has a 4-star rating with 60 reviews, so it seems like a popular game. I've never played it myself, but it looks pretty good. It looks pretty fun if you're into first-person shooters. It's only available on the Fire TV first and second gen, so not for the Fire TV stick, and you will need a game controller to play this, but definitely looks like an interesting app at a decent price. This is the lowest this app has ever been. It kind of matches the same deal that we saw a couple months back. So if you didn't catch it then, here's another chance to get Shadowgun on sale. All right, let's move on to some Amazon Echo and Alexa news before we get into the Q&A section. So one thing that happened this week is that Amazon Echo now supports repeating alarms. And so surprisingly, the alarm capabilities on the Echo all this time have only allowed you to basically pick a time for the alarm to go off, and then once it goes off, you have to basically reset it yourself manually for it to go off again. So you couldn't have like an alarm that went off at the same time every day or something like that. So now if you have an Amazon Echo, you can say something like, Alexa, set an alarm every day for, and then, you know, basically say the time that you want that alarm to be set, and every day that alarm will go off at the same time. You can also set alarms on a per day basis, so you can say, Alexa, set an alarm every Sunday at whatever time, so that'll work, and it'll go off only every Sunday. And you can also select for only on weekdays or only on weekends. So you can say, Alexa, set a weekend alarm at, and then say the time. And so nice little feature, especially because the Echo Dot is coming out soon, which Amazon has been pushing as a nightstand device. And so if you need to use that as your main alarm, obviously you're going to want repeating alarms. And so a while back, Amazon added additional sounds for alarms that you can configure either through the Alexa app or through the Alexa web portal at alexa.amazon.com. And so now you can actually configure the repeating alarms there also. So very nice, very needed feature. And, you know, finally it has come to Alexa. Unfortunately, alarms are still not supported on the Fire TV, and I highly doubt that they will ever be supported on the Fire TV, mostly because the Fire TV cannot ensure that it is connected to a turned on speaker system. And so if your TV is off and it's time for an alarm to go off, the Fire TV can't do anything. There's no speaker built in. And so that's why I think we'll never really get alarms through Alexa on the Fire TV. That'll be limited to only devices that actually have a speaker built in. So next bit of Alexa news is that Amazon themselves have put up a guide on their official GitHub page. It's basically showing you how to make your own little Alexa enabled speaker using a Raspberry Pi. For those who don't know, Raspberry Pi is pretty much a little board that is essentially a complete Linux PC for around $30-$35 that you can get and do a little fun hacking with. So several people have actually used Amazon's Alexa Web Services API to create basically little Alexa-enabled speakers through a Raspberry Pi. I actually know of three different articles now that actually have done the same thing. Boudica has chimed in here on Twitter. She says that Nova Spirit has a different version of this, and I actually know of one that is called, quote, the $10 Echo that was, I think, developed by a guy named Sam Mashin. So several people now have basically created little makeshift Amazon Echoes. The downside to all of these little projects is that none of them have the always-listening microphones, so you have to actually press a button, similar to the Amazon Tap speaker, where you have to press a button to make your Alexa commands heard, and that activates the microphone. But it's a fun little project. I mean, if you look at the guide that Amazon has actually included here, it's very thorough, so it seems like most people can actually follow it pretty easily. You just need what looks like the Raspberry Pi, a USB microphone, and a speaker, and that's pretty much it. And of course, you need the micro SD card to store the OS for the Raspberry Pi and an Ethernet connection for the Raspberry Pi. But for the most part, it looks like it's pretty straightforward. You set up the OS, and they have full pictures with instructions here. It seems like the most tedious part, in my opinion, is actually getting your Alexa developer account set up, because in order to get Alexa to listen to your commands and accept your commands and respond to your commands, you actually have to create a developer account and link that up with some, you know, special IDs that are unique to your account. And so, but once you get all of that set up, it looks like it works pretty decently. If you recall from a few episodes ago, I mentioned the Alexa web app. If you haven't seen that, I'll put a link in the show notes. But basically, it's a website that is Alexa. And so there's just a big circle. You click the circle and it'll use your PC's microphone, and you could just talk to Alexa that way. And so this is basically the same exact service, just through an actual hardware tiny device that you can play with. So if you want to play with Alexa's web app, it'll give you an idea of what this little homemade Alexa-enabled speaker is going to be like. All right, last bit of news before we get into the Q&A section. Some breaking news right here live on the podcast. Joshua has just chimed in that Nest has just announced that they now are fully integrated with Alexa. So you can control your Nest thermostat with your Amazon Fire TV or your Amazon Echo or the upcoming Amazon Tap or the Amazon Echo Dot. So basically all the Alexa capable devices can now control Nest. So we heard about this a couple weeks ago, I believe it was, when the Amazon Tap and the Echo Dot were first announced. We heard that Nest integration was coming later this month, and thankfully it's here. And really nice that Nest has actually acknowledged the Fire TV specifically, saying that it works with the Fire TV. Usually when we get these Alexa integrated smart home devices, they usually just mention the Echo, and then it's a mystery whether it's going to actually work with the Fire TV or not. But thankfully, Nest has actually integrated with the Fire TV itself. So if you have a Alexa capable Fire TV with the voice remote, either the Fire TV stick or the Fire TV's running Fire OS 5, you can control your thermostat. Again, this is breaking news right now as I'm recording this, so I haven't really fully played with it myself. I have a Nest, so I'll definitely be writing a full article about the capabilities that are there, what you can do, what you can't do. So look forward to that next week for sure. But big thanks to Joshua for chiming in on Twitter live during the podcast recording, letting me know and letting us know that this has been added to Alexa's repertoire of smart home devices. All right, let's move on to the Q&A section. Every Thursdays, I make a post on AFTVnews.com asking people to submit their questions. or topics for me to discuss here on the podcast episode. And so people who watch live can always tweet me at AFTV News. They can send questions live. We've already got a couple here waiting. But if you don't want to watch live and get your question in live, you can always post your question on the Thursday posts. So look for that every week. First question here from Jeff on Twitter. He asks, hi, can you connect more than one official Amazon remote to one single Fire TV? Yeah, for sure. The Fire TV accepts multiple Amazon remotes just fine, whether they're the Wi-Fi based newer ones or the Bluetooth based ones. Basically, just go into the add a remote option within the Fire TV settings and you can just add a second or third or fourth or fifth remote. I'm not sure if there's actually a limit to how many you can add, but you can definitely add multiple ones. They both will work just fine simultaneously. So you and your spouse or you and your kid can both have remotes and use them to actually play games that use only remotes. For example, Flappy Bird Family is one game that's really nice to play on the remotes. And so if you have more than one remote, it's a one button game that you can play with two remotes. So yeah, definitely no problems there. All right, we got another question here from Jeff on Twitter. He says, the UMAP app is no longer available on Amazon Store and the free version is expired now. Can we still get it? For those who don't know, the UMAP app is that app that I talked about way while back that basically adds Chromecast capabilities to the Fire TV. And to answer your question, no, you cannot still get it. The reason is that Google basically asked Amazon to remove it because the UMAP app was using some proprietary protocols that Google does not make available for anybody to use. So that's why the app was pulled from the Amazon App Store and basically Google forced the developer to basically shut down their app. So unfortunately, there is no longer a way to get UMAP working on the Fire TV. All right, next question from I Am Russian. He says, HDR 4K TVs are finally hitting the market in force and at an affordable rate. HDR content is starting to roll out on Blu-ray, Netflix, and Amazon's own video service. However, the current Fire TV is incapable of supporting HDR due to using an old version of HDMI. Do you see Amazon releasing an updated version of the current Fire TV or a brand new version sometime this year? As I understand, there was 18 months from the original Fire TV to the 4K Fire TV, and waiting until spring 2017 seems inconceivable to me. Yeah, I Am Russian, that's correct. The second generation Fire TV has a 1.4 version HDMI port, and HDR, I believe, requires at least 2.0, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't think that can be changed in a software update. I think that's an actual physical hardware limitation on the device. So we're not going to see HDR on the second generation Fire TV. As far as the 18-month gap between the first generation Fire TV and the second generation Fire TV, I believe that was because Amazon wanted to change when the device was being released. They wanted to make it closer to the holidays because that's kind of the best time to release a new device because that's when the big shopping season is. So you want all of that buzz around a new device to happen near the holidays. That way it, you know, you get a lot of sales happening at the holidays for the new device. In my opinion, I don't think Amazon's going to wait another 18 months to release a new device. I have a feeling that at the end of this year, maybe around the October month period, we'll probably see a new Fire TV and a new Fire TV stick released. Again, this is a complete guess on my part, but it kind of makes sense. For the most part, Amazon releases all of their successful products on a yearly cycle. I think I looked it up and the exception was one, the first generation Fire TV. And I think the first generation Kindle was actually the only two products not released on a yearly cycle. Also, the Fire Phone obviously was not released on a yearly cycle, but that's a whole different story just because that was kind of a big flop. And so Amazon is just completely taking that back to the drawing board, it looks like, and maybe starting from scratch with the Fire Phone. And so then that's why you didn't see a Fire Phone 2 released 1 year after the first Fire Phone. But I do think that a third generation Fire TV will come out at the end of this year. Now, whether or not that device will have HDR support, you know, your guess is as good as mine, but I would think that it would have HDR support just because there's not that much more you could do with the device. You know, HDR is kind of like the next step beyond 4K. And so it makes sense that that would be the big feature for the new Fire TV if they do release a new one this year. The other feature that I would hope to see in a third generation Fire TV is support for 60 frames per second 4K video, you know, possibly have the whole UI output in 4K as opposed to in 1080p the way it is right now, and it only switches to 4K when you actually play a 4K video file. I don't expect them to render the UI in 4K. I still expect that to be rendered in 1080p and then just up converted to 4K like all the other 4K devices are doing, just because having a UI UI rendered in 4K and possibly apps actually rendered in 4K is really taxing on the CPU, and I don't think it's necessary. You know, you only want the 4K video, but to have a smoother transition from the UI to a 4K video, it would be beneficial to just have the device outputting 4K resolution 2160p all the time, and just, you know, basically not have to do that resolution switch that the current second generation Fire TV has to do. So yeah, to answer your question, I do think that they'll release a new Fire TV at the end of this year. Next question here from Jerry. He says, have you used the NVIDIA Shield? And if so, how does it compare to AFTV for both gaming and Kodi use? I hear a lot of people rank that as the highest spec slash best possible device on the market right now, but I know it is more expensive than AFTV. I know, Jerry, I have not used the NVIDIA Shield myself. I never bought that device specifically just because I didn't see that it offered too much more over the Fire TV, but I have read a lot about it. I have read a lot of people talking about it and comparing it to the Fire TV just because, yeah, like you said, it is kind of the highest spec device that's similar to the Fire TV. It's the highest spec media player. So based on everything I've read about the device, the biggest thing that it has over the Fire TV, like you said, is the specs. The processor, the GPU that is in that device blows the Fire TV out of the water. Now, the big question is, do you need that processor, that you need that processing power? Because the device costs pretty nearly twice as much as the Fire TV. I say nearly because it ships with a game controller for $200, whereas the Fire TV ships with a remote control for $100. And so if you compare it to the gaming edition of the Fire TV, that's $140 versus the $200. So it's not really twice as much. But for most people who are not buying the game controller, it is pretty much twice as expensive. And so really the only thing you need that crazy good Tegra processor that is in the NVIDIA Shield is for gaming. You know, the NVIDIA Shield can actually play console caliber games, actual good PC games that are not available on the Fire TV, not available on any Android device. These are very specific to the NVIDIA Shield. Games like Half-Life 2, I believe, Portal, the original Portal, Portal 2 maybe. I'm not completely sure, but there are actual high-level PC games that would not run on the Fire TV that can run on the NVIDIA Shield. Now, these games have been specifically ported over to the NVIDIA Shield, so that's why that catalog of games that are kind of a step up above the Fire TV's gaming capabilities is very limited. You have to wait for either NVIDIA or the developer to port that game over to the NVIDIA Shield platform, so you're not going to get too many games there, but it's kind of a middle ground between the Fire TV's Android gaming and actual like Xbox gaming, you know, real console gaming. So the Shield kind of sits in the middle between there. Whether it's a good middle place to be is kind of your opinion. You know, in my opinion, I don't think it's a good place. I think the Fire TV has a great sweet spot being $100 and having decent gaming capabilities. Whereas if you want better gaming, you should probably just step up to a full-blown console. You know, going into that middle ground Android console that the NVIDIA Shield is trying to create, it doesn't seem to be that successful and that popular for them, but the people who have it absolutely love it. I mean, if you've got money to burn and you don't really care about spending twice as much for a streaming box, the NVIDIA Shield seems like a great device. The biggest downsides, other than the price, is that it doesn't have Amazon capabilities built in. So you're not going to get Amazon video streaming. You're not going to get Prime content on there. I believe there's a way to sideload the Android Amazon Prime tablet app onto the NVIDIA Shield and navigate it using a mouse. But again, it's not ideal, but it's possible, it seems. I'm not completely sure. I haven't looked into it lately to see if that's still something you can do. As far as Kodi capabilities go, it's pretty much on par. You know, as far as playback goes, it's going to do 4K Kodi playback. So 4K is important to you and you like to use Kodi, absolutely, NVIDIA Shield is the way to go. Fire TV has nothing on 4K Kodi support, so that's not even a contest. Go for the NVIDIA Shield. Great little box there. But if mostly you're just doing H.264 1080p streaming, the NVIDIA Shield does not offer that much more over the Fire TV for just regular 1080p videos. So another advantage the NVIDIA Shield has as far as Kodi goes over the Fire TV is that you can install Kodi directly from the Google Play Store on the NVIDIA Shield, whereas on the Fire TV you have to sideload it. So a little bit of a hassle there, and you know, the whole thing about launching Kodi on the Fire TV, you have to use Fire Starter often to do the whole double tap of the home button, and whereas the NVIDIA Shield, you could just launch Kodi right from the main menu. So definitely an advantage there. Whether it's a big one, you know, it's up to you. So yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, if you want the ultimate Android-based streaming box and you don't care about Amazon content, the NVIDIA Shield seems to be the option. You know, it has the better processor. You know, it has the better Kodi support slightly because you can download it straight from the Play Store. They've actually made sure that Kodi 4K playback is available on the NVIDIA Shield. And so it definitely has a few advantages over the Fire TV. But Fire TV definitely has the advantage where it's better priced and it has the Amazon content. Next question here from Ryan J. He says, I would love to know if you or anyone has come across ways to track when Amazon Video goes on sale. This site seems to be on top of various apps that get price drops, which is awesome, but I am finding it difficult to track other kinds of digital media that could be consumed on my Fire TV. The only resource I am aware of right now is KinoHunt.com, but that seems to be limited. Ryan, I personally use Blu-ray.com. It's Blu-ray, B-L-U-ray.com. They actually do a pretty damn good job about tracking Amazon Video sales. They have a whole deal section and you could break it down by per day, so you could see which videos have gone on sale or have had a price drop from Amazon Video every single day, essentially. So I often check that, you know, at least once a week. Sometimes when I post my video deals, that's where I'm getting my information from. They do a pretty decent job. My biggest complaint about their tracking and their service is that they don't differentiate between SD prices and HD prices. So when you see a movie has gone on sale, oftentimes you click through and you see that the price that they had listed was actually for the SD quality, not the HD quality. And, you know, this day and age, you really want to get that HD quality usually, but or at least be told which one that price is for. So that's my biggest complaint, but blue-ray.com is a pretty good way to track Amazon Video deals. All right, next question here from Jose says, what do you think about Vizio's new TVs, which are just big Chromecasts? Before I answer this question, I do want to mention Jeff has chimed in here on Twitter saying that another advantage of the NVIDIA Shield TV is that it's actually a Chromecast device also. So all Android TV boxes are also essentially Chromecast. So definitely, I forgot to mention that. Thank you, Jeff, for chiming in on Twitter. It's kind of relevant here to Jose's question about the Vizio TV. So I thought I'd mention it right now before I moved on. That's definitely an advantage over the Fire TV that what you get with the NVIDIA Shield. It's a Chromecast device, essentially. Now, addressing Jose's question specifically about Vizio's new TVs. For those who don't know, Vizio is a TV manufacturer. They're the U.S.'s biggest TV manufacturer. They don't actually make the TVs in the U.S., but the company itself is based in the U.S. And they this week announced their new line of TVs. I think it's called the P-Series, if I'm not mistaken. That basically they've stripped out all of these smart TV capabilities out of the TV. They don't have a smart TV OS on there anymore. And basically they're just relying on the Chromecast ability, or essentially the Google Cast ability, which kind of got renamed this week. And so these TVs have no way to actually navigate through apps on the TV itself. They're relying on a separate smartphone or tablet to basically send content to the TV. And so these TVs actually get shipped with a 6-inch tablet, Android based tablet, basically nearly stock Android as far as I could tell, and they have a app on there that helps you find content, and then you can use that tablet to send content to the TV. So as far as what I think about these TVs, I think it's a great move for Vizio to basically strip out all of that, you know, built-in app capabilities, just because that seems to get outdated so quickly nowadays. And you kind of, you know, I personally prefer to have a box on the outside of the TV handling all of that streaming content, like the Fire TV, like the Apple TV, like the Android TV boxes. I think that makes a lot more sense than actually building that capability into the TV, just because you just want a few big players so that they stay updated. And it seems that the streaming companies don't really bother updating their smart TV apps as quickly as they do their streaming box apps. So that's one big advantage of having it not built into the TV's OS and actually in a separate device. So I think it's a great move that Vizio just basically stripped all that out and just made a good TV that doesn't really have the smart capabilities built in. Now, that said, I personally think it's a mistake to ship all of these TVs with a Vizio branded tablet, essentially. You know, I'd rather they reduce the price of the TV and not give me that tablet. You know, hopefully they'll release another series of these TVs where you basically just get the TV and it has Chromecast capabilities built in and you don't get the tablet. Because I know these TVs are also shipping with a very basic little remote control that can basically control the input and all that volume and all that stuff that you would want anyway. And so that's really all I would personally want, mainly because I think that tablet will get outdated pretty quickly, and you're going to keep your TV for a lot longer than you essentially keep a tablet. And so I would imagine down the line that tablet is going to become nearly unusable. Even though it is fairly hefty, I believe it has a octa-core, you know, 8-core processor in there. It has a lot of RAM. So it's a pretty hefty tablet. It will last longer than your average Android tablet, it seems. But still, I don't need some TV-dedicated tablet. You know, I've already got smartphones. I've already got tablets. Most people already have these devices that they're going to keep updated more frequently than the Vizio-made tablet. So that's my opinion on it. I like the idea of stripping out all of the smart app capabilities that are built into these TVs these days and just relying on something outside and just using the TV as a display. But I think it's a mistake that they made a dedicated tablet for the TV that's shipping with the TV, just because I don't want another tablet that is going to get outdated quicker than I replace my TV. All right, next question from Joey says, any ETA on RBox's version 5 for those with the Fire TV 1, which are already rooted on the older version and official updates blocked? So I was expecting this question. It seems like every week now we get this question, which is totally fine. I expect there's a lot of first-gen Fire TV owners who are rooted and still waiting for the Fire OS 5 software update from RBox to be released. I'm sorry to say I don't have an update yet. He hasn't contacted me about it, so he seems to still maybe be busy and hasn't really made much progress on that. So definitely, as soon as I hear anything from RBox, I'll definitely make a post about it, you know, updating you, since it's been so long since we've gotten an update from him. But again, I'm not going to pester him asking him about updates or anything like that. It's really nice that he's still doing this, and he still says he's going to release the pre-rooted ROM for the older generation devices and the new TWRP recovery. I've talked about it in great detail in previous episodes, so I won't go over it anymore in this one. All right, next question here from Mark. He asks, what's the best game controller? I assume he's asking about the best game controller for the Fire TV. In my opinion, the best game controller for the Fire TV is the one made by Amazon. The second generation Amazon Fire game controller seems, in my opinion, to be the most compatible with the Fire TV, obviously because it's made by Amazon. It has the most features because it's the only one that has the audio port on it that works with the Fire TV. And it's a pretty good controller, you know, for the most part, just as a controller itself. The joysticks are great. The triggers are great. You know, it's a pretty decent controller. You know, the biggest downside to it is the price. At $50, it's pretty pricey for a game controller, especially if you're just doing casual gaming on the Fire TV. You know, it's more the price that you would pay for a console level game controller, which I believe it is, but I understand a lot of people are not that interested in spending so much on a game controller when they're just going to play $199 apps on the Fire TV. So if you're looking for an alternative, I would say the Xbox 360 controller is pretty good. It works really well with the Fire TV. You can get it pretty affordably. You can even get third-party Xbox 360 controllers that work really well on the Fire TV. So if you're looking to spend a little less than the $50, you can go that route for sure. I keep hearing a lot about the Xiaomi game controller. I think you can get that for around $20. So that's a good option there. I myself have not used a wide selection of game controllers for the Fire TV, so I can't really say beyond those suggestions. But you know, people can maybe chime in on the comments, maybe with their suggestions. All right, next set of comments here from Daniel. He's mentioning something I talked about last episode. He asked about the key layout files for various game controllers. He's posted some good info here on how to figure out your specific game controller's vendor number and product number. That way you can search for a custom key layout file specific to your game controller. I'll definitely put a link in the show notes directly to this comment. He shows an ADB shell command that you can run to get the actual vendor information for your specific controller. He talks about this app, I believe, called Hacker's Keyboard that will help you load a custom key layout file onto your device. So definitely some good info there from Daniel. Thank you very much for updating us on that. And I'll definitely put a link in the show notes to that info for those interested. Daniel continues on to mention a website called AndroidGamePadGames.com. He says it's a good resource to figure out which Android games work well with a gamepad. So definitely check that out if you're interested in that. All right, last comment here from Daniel. He's asking about a way to fix his Fire TV stick. He says that he's made some changes to it and he's got it crashing now, not getting past the boot logo. He says he's tried Fastboot and he's wondering if there's a way to flash or get the stock software kind of back onto it. Unfortunately, Daniel, no, because the Fire TV Stick's bootloader has never been unlocked, there is no way to flash any kind of OS onto a device that can't boot. So unfortunately, there's really no way to recover that Fire TV Stick right now. This is exactly why I recommend people not to root their device unless they can get a custom recovery on there, because that's your number one way of recovering from any mistake that you make or any change that you make to the OS that makes the device not boot anymore. Getting into custom recovery is really your only way to fix that device. And since there is no custom recovery for the Fire TV Stick, I recommend people don't root yet for this exact reason. There's really no way to recover this one, unfortunately. Sorry about that, Daniel. All right, next question here from Hey Radar. He says, at the end of your show, you ask us to like your show. Is there a way to like your podcast that uses the RSS feed? Hey Radar is referring to when I mentioned if people are watching on YouTube to hit that like button at the end of my show. There's no real way to like a RSS feed. He's talking about the audio only version. You can leave a star rating on iTunes, or a lot of RSS apps will maybe ask you to rate a podcast through the app. I think maybe Stitcher or TuneIn, they also have some kind of rating systems, but there's no real generic way to leave a rating for a podcast. You can only do it through each individual service. And so if the service you happen to be getting my podcast from offers some kind of rating system, just, you know, take a look, and I'd really appreciate a rating there. But yeah, don't worry too much about it. It's all right. Hey Radar has another question. He says, what tools and what is your process to publish your podcast? If you have a guide you followed, would you mind sharing? For this podcast, I host it myself through just my own web host. I actually use WordPress as the back end for the actual posting. And there's a plugin that I use called Blueberry. I think it's without an E. So Blubrry, I believe, is the name of the plugin for WordPress. And basically, it has you just set up your information for your podcast, and then it will generate the RSS feed needed for services like iTunes to pick up on the podcast. So that's what I use. Host it myself. There are other services that are pretty good that I've heard about. Libsyn, I think, .com is the service. I'll be sure to find the exact URL and put a link in the show notes for those interested. But that is a paid service. You have to pay for them to basically distribute your podcast for you. And so I went the route of just hosting it myself. And everything so far has been working pretty well. You know, I host it on a very basic host. I don't have, you know, too many listeners. So it, you know, maybe down the line I'll actually go to a third party. But yeah, I use WordPress as the back end. I use that plugin, Blueberry, and it's a very simple interface. And basically it's like making a WordPress post every time you post a new episode for a podcast. So that's what I use. All right, next question here from Mayo. He says, what are the chances to use my VPN on my Fire TV? Maybe on a rooted device? If you're asking about the chances that the Fire TV itself will support VPNs in the future, I'd say pretty unlikely. It seems mostly these streaming services like Amazon Prime don't like people using VPNs because it messes with the deals that they have with the content owners and the networks, because networks want to charge different prices for streaming to different countries. And so VPNs kind of circumvent that. So I don't think it's likely that the Fire TV will support VPNs by default. As far as rooted devices, I believe there's a way to get VPNs working on a rooted Fire TV. I've never done it myself. I've looked at a certain guide. I don't know if it's still relevant, but I'll put a link in the show notes to that guide that I've found in the past discussing it. And so it does seem like there's a way to get VPNs working on a rooted Fire TV. So look for that link in the show notes. Next question from Mayo is, I bought Knights of the Old Republic when it went free, but have never downloaded it. Now I downloaded it, but I can't get it to work since I always get an error, download failed, external storage full. I assume this is because under Android Lollipop, apps need to ask for permission. How can I grant it access manually? I thought you have already mentioned it, but I can't find it anymore. So it's true, under Android Lollipop, apps need permission to write to external storage, but I'm pretty sure that has nothing to do with the error that you're receiving. Knights of the Old Republic, I believe, is one of the games that has to download a big chunk of like 2.5 gigabytes of files after it installs and launches for the first time. And those files cannot be stored on external storage. So most likely, if you're seeing a download failed error because of memory full, it probably means that the internal memory on your Fire TV is full. You're going to need about 2.5 gigs at least free on the internal storage on your Fire TV to run this specific game, because it does not support moving those files over to external storage, mainly because it has to download those files after the fact. Usually when you're looking at games available on the Amazon Fire TV, look at the actual file size that is listed on Amazon's website for that specific game. If the file size is very low, like in the few tens of megabytes, then you're pretty sure that that game is going to download the majority of its files after the fact. And when it does that, you cannot move those files over to external storage. Now, games that list their file size as being several hundred megabytes right on Amazon's website, that means that the game is downloading those files when it installs itself from Amazon's servers. So those games, they can be moved to external storage, and so you won't have these issues, and those games will actually just install directly to external storage if you have external storage plugged into your Fire TV. So Mayo, to get Knights of the Old Republic working, you're gonna have to clear out 2.5 gigs at least, I believe, on your internal Fire TV storage for that game to run. All right, next question here is from Nate. He's got an issue with his first-gen Fire TV. Looks like he's rooted and he's got recovery on there, but for whatever reason, he's not able to flash a ROM through recovery and he can't boot into the regular OS. He says he's tried the fast boot method to flash a ROM, but he's getting this error message, failed, flashing not allowed for locked hardware. And he's asking, is there any way around this, or is the Fire TV garbage? So yeah, Nate, if you're seeing that message about flashing not allowed for locked hardware, it means your bootloader is not unlocked, which means fast boot is basically useless to you. You cannot flash with fast boot if the bootloader is locked, and which it seems like that's the case with your device. I can't tell fully from your comment here if you can actually fully boot into recovery and you're having an issue flashing, or if it's actually you can't boot into recovery and that's where the progress line is failing you. But if you can boot into recovery, you should be able to wipe your system partition and then flash a new ROM. That might help you. I would also try wiping your data partition, wiping your cache and your Dalvik cache. If the device is just not working, there's no harm in wiping those partitions as long as you can get into recovery consistently. But one warning is, once you wipe your system partition, you definitely don't want to exit recovery until you can flash a new ROM onto there. So be careful with that. But again, if your Fire TV is just not working, this is kind of your last hope. And if you can't get into recovery and your bootloader is not unlocked, sorry, unfortunately, there's no way around that. You are basically hosed. I would just put it on a shelf, and maybe down the line, somebody will figure out a new way to unlock the bootloader. But because the device is older now, most people are playing with the newer devices, so it's unlikely somebody will find a way to unlock that bootloader. Next question here from Steve Klein. He says, why are plasma TVs so hard to find nowadays? Is the technology obsolete? Didn't it offer certain advantages over LED TVs? Steve, this is actually a topic I don't know too much about, so I can't really, fully answer it. I do know plasma TVs back in the day did definitely have advantages over LCDs, where they had better contrast ratios, but I think LCDs have kind of caught up now, and so it's pretty on par, if I'm not mistaken. Another reason you might not be seeing plasma TVs is that I think making plasmas in large sizes, like above 60 inches, is difficult for manufacturers, and so that's why they're switching to the LCDs more often for those large sizes. And it seems like people are buying these larger sizes nowadays just because prices have dropped so much. You can get like a 4K 50 inch LCD TV for like around $500 or so, I think, now. And as Boudica here is mentioning on Twitter, she says that they're getting superseded by the 4K OLEDs that are coming out. That seems like the next step in the technology. OLEDs definitely have the best contrast ratio because the OLED can actually turn off those individual pixels, whereas the LED LCD TVs have basically the backlight, and they can kind of turn off regions to make the blacks darker, but nothing as dark as the actual OLEDs. And so I'm sorry I don't have really a better answer to your question, but again, I think it's because of the issues that come around making the really large plasmas, and the fact that the picture quality on the plasmas is not that much greater than the LED LCDs that are coming out these days. All right, next question here is from Ray. He says he's got a first gen non-bootable Fire TV. It looks like it took the update but then couldn't install it somehow, and now it's not booting. And so he's wondering if he can possibly fix it using the EMMC accessing method. For those not aware, the EMMC method is where you actually solder leads onto the motherboard of the Fire TV itself, and that lets you connect it to an SD card and actually plug it into an SD card reader with a PC, and that way you can actually access the files that are on the actual memory chips that are in the Fire TV directly using a PC. It's a fairly difficult process because those leads are very tiny and it does involve opening up the device and actually soldering leads onto it. So if you actually can successfully access the file system on the device using this eMMC method where you're soldering leads, what I would suggest is looking at my downgrading guide. It actually shows you how you can manually install a stock update onto a device. So basically what you're doing is you're creating this little file that you're putting in, I believe, the cache directory of the file system on the Fire TV, and then you're putting the update zip file that you can download from aftvnews.com/software. So if you actually have the official update zip file in the right directory, and you actually have this text file with the right text in it in another directory, again, it's all laid out in my upgrading downgrading guide, the Fire TV, as long as it can get into its stock recovery and actually detect that you have those files in place, it will flash those files and install a complete new OS on the device. And so that would be my best bet if you can actually access the file system through the eMMC method. All right, that'll conclude the 30-second episode of the AFTV Newscast. Thank you so much for watching. If you're watching this on YouTube, please hit that like button and subscribe to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/AFTVNews. If you're listening to this on the audio-only RSS feeds, please, like I mentioned earlier, if your service has a review system or if you can leave a rating there, that'd be very much appreciated. As always, I stream live every Fridays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, and you're welcome to watch live. I very much appreciate it for those who do watch live and interact with me on Twitter during the live stream and ask questions. It's really fun to do that, so I definitely recommend everybody watches live if they can. But of course, the audio only version and the video edited version go up the next day on Saturdays, as always. Thank you so much for watching. I hope to hear from you and see you next week.